Hello. I think we're ready to make a start. It's past 6:30, so we'll get going. The first item is the emergency evacuation procedure. I think we know where we need to go in the event of an emergency. Obviously, the doors at the front and the doors at the back here. Item 2 is apologies for absence. Have we got any apologies for absence?
Mr. Chairman, Councillor Ryby, Councillor Burt is substituting, and Councillor Frank, Councillor Raper is substituting.
Item 3 is declarations of interest. Do any members have interest to declare under the Code of Conduct? Nope. Item 4 is the minutes of the previous meeting. Hopefully everyone's been able to have a look at those. There was obviously just the one item on there. Has anyone got any comments to make on the minutes? I'll move therefore to accept those. We'll move to the vote.
Chairman, that's 8 votes for and 2 abstentions.
That's great, thank you. The next item is urgent business. There is an item of urgent business. And the late report should be with you on that, and we'll discuss that when we get to it. It should be incorporated seamlessly, hopefully, with the agenda, to just to make things as easy as possible. I know it's often difficult shuffling through. So, item 6 is delivering the council plan. And is it Tony, you to introduce this item?
Thank you, Chair. Well, made me jump myself there. Thank you, Chairman. The report is one of reports that come to PNR on a regular basis to give a quarterly update on the key performance indicators in delivering the council's council plan. The report itself identifies that there are only 4 items within the performance indicators which are not green. We've got 3 amber and 1 red. The details outlining why those are amber and red are in parts of the report. In relation to the ambers, although amber ones are quite close to the target. For example, on the speed of processing claims for council tax support, members can see that the target for the council is 25 days, whereas the actual is 25.71 days, which is only slightly in excess. But you will also note, members, that the reason for that is that the universal credit claims, which are the non-universal credit claims, are only taking 15.26 days, and that's within the council's gift in terms of in terms of working with those. But the universal credit new claims are 27.66 days, in other words, well in excess of the 25 days, and that is actually from the DWP. So the fact that the overall is slightly in excess is not entirely down to the council's workload, but is very much about information that comes through from the DWP. In terms of the red item, which is customer service, under customer services, with customer complaints resolved within 5 working days. The target is 75%, and we are currently operating at 60%. The note for that, Chair, is identified that it's been a dip in resource response times due to management and resourcing restructures and processes, and that a more robust system for monitoring of these complaints is now being introduced. The rest are all green, which is obviously very encouraging, and we are very close to making sure that the three ambers are green, and hopefully the red will be green by the next time we report this back to members.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Tony. Just before we move into questions and discussion on this, just for the benefit of some of the new members of this committee, this comes before us periodically and also before the overview and scrutiny committee. It basically has a number of indicators within it which align to the council plan, basically checking that we're meeting the objectives in order to achieve our priorities, basically. This has undergone quite a lot of changes in recent years, and is likely to also be changed again over the coming months. I know that Tony and the officers are looking at how this document can be made to be as effective as possible. So that's just a bit of background and a warning, really, that this may change as time goes on, and an update will be brought to us on how that work is progressing, basically. Has anyone got any particular questions on this which haven't been addressed so far?
The environment one that we've got agreeing on, I was just wanting to know, do we do that in-house still, the environment, the checking of the premises and buildings and things for the food establishments? Is it something that we employ to do, so we're doing the whole lot and we have a level playing field?
This is on page 9.
Sorry, page 9. Appendix 1 of delivering the council plan. Yes, sorry.
Sorry, Joe. Yes, I believe we do provide this in-house. Yes.
Have we got any other further questions? Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, obviously it's pleasing to know that we've got quite a lot of greens, but you would expect me to ask a question about customer complaints, because obviously it's a red. And I was just interested to know about the new systems that have been put in place. Are you at liberty to tell us about what has been put in place, just to give us peace of mind that is actually happening?
Yes, Chair. Several things are happening. First of all, we're actually reviewing that indicator itself, because at the moment, 5 days, if I can explain to members that the 5 days is something which is very difficult to hit for a variety of reasons. One of the reasons is that, for example, if a member of staff to whom that complaint is being addressed is on leave, and we respond to somebody to say, yes, that person is unfortunately on leave for the next week or so, but once they're back, they will pick up the complaint. That still registers as a non-compliance, because you've only got actually 5 days in which to respond. So sometimes it's very difficult to actually provide a response within that time frame. And we are considering to revise that in a number of different ways. We've looked at what other authorities do, and for example, they have a differential system whereby you expect, for example, it may be, say, 50% of your responses are in 5 days, the 20% of the remaining are within 10 days, and for those which may take a lot more background research to provide an answer for, that they may, that last 10% might be within, say, 15 days. So we're looking at something which will give a more realistic response time rather than just the 5 days. The other thing that we're doing at the moment is very much along trying to provide a response time as quickly as we possibly can so that we've got people chasing that up straight away.
Thank you very much, Chairman.
Councillor Raper.
Thank you, Chairman. Following on from that explanation, I'm acutely aware that some people are making an application may be left somewhat short on finance. Do we have systems in place to assist that they're not left out of pocket or financially disadvantaged by a delay that's manifest from this establishment?
So is that an application for
whatever credit that is it the system? Is it our handling of the claim? Does that disenfranchise or cost an applicant financially, basically?
Chair, you're not referring to the customer complaints within 5 days. Are you talking about a different indicator?
That's the thing. If the complaints or whatever it is not resolved quickly,
yes,
the applicants then finding themselves financially at odds with what they're expected to receive as to what they're actually going to receive? Or is that outside the remit of basically of
I think the indicator you're talking about is in relation to benefits, whereas what we're talking about here is just general complaints from the general public.
Withdraw the question, Chair.
Got any other questions or comments on the council plan indicators? Yep.
Just to pick up on, you said there was a problem with the resources, a dip in resources. Could you clarify what you mean by that, please? Is it staffing or delivery?
It was a staffing issue, but that's now been resolved. But it was resolved within the last quarter, which is why those figures are slightly down on figures in previous quarters.
Do you have a supplementary question?
Yeah, please. It's to do with the estimates on the operations following on from that. You haven't actually hit that page yet, I don't think. But you give traffic lights of green, but everything is an estimate. And I was just wondering how you compare with estimates where there's no pure data that you're driven by. Page 13, is it page 14 or 13? Because I've got a different amended copy now. 14, yeah. Under your notes there.
Oh, right, okay. I don't know the answer to that question, but I will get the answer and provide it to you.
Have we got any further questions on this item? Councillor Thackeray.
This is just a question as to why air quality data isn't included on this chart of targets.
Chair, as far as I'm aware, these are the performance indicators that have been agreed with Council in line with the current Council plan, okay. And that's the reason why they are as they are.
All right.
Thank I suppose, given that this is evolving, that could be something which might be looked at in terms of being included under the, I think there's a section on environment in here, that could be something which could be added. What that indicator might be, I don't know. Obviously, we've got one specific site which is obviously the centre of conversation regarding air quality. Whether you'd restrict it to that one area or whether you'd look more broadly across
the
district.
Sorry, Chairman, to correct you, you are incorrect. It's nothing to do with the one site being problematic or troublesome or otherwise. There are an entire list of monitoring sites in the air quality management area, all of which fluctuate or reduce or increase on an annual basis. If this is the platform in which to do it, I'd like to correct everybody's idea that we live in Moulton with one problem area. We don't.
This probably isn't the right place to talk about that.
But anyway,
the point I was trying to make is that we've got one air quality management area, and I was saying, should that be the one place that we look at in terms of these indicators, or other places in Rydale which we should look at?
Sorry. You have one area, one management area, which relates to multiple locations.
Yes.
Therefore, if you were to translate that in terms of the graphs that you have here, you would have 12 months of data in the same way that, if I get my glasses on, standard searches carried out in 10 working days, for example. And if you had a year-on-year graph of the same style, you would be able to see what the fluctuation in air quality has been. Therefore, with specific reference to what you would see in front of you, you would, if you looked at the air quality data, for example, between 2017 and 2018, see a significant drop as a result of the HGV restriction over Norton Level Crossing, which might... Therefore, I think it would just be a helpful indicator.
Okay, well, we can certainly take that on board and have a look at about its inclusion. Do you want to say anything on that specifically, Tony?
Only to reiterate what you said earlier, that the way in which this data is presented will be reviewed, and as a consequence of the new plan, council plan, when that comes into being, subsequent performance indicators should reflect that.
Excellent. Councillor Andrews.
It's not really a question because I don't think you probably know the answer, but on page 10, we got a green light. It's the households approaching Rydale District Council for assistance. The latest notes, some low-level advice is being provided for Horton through their drop-in, therefore not included in the figures. Change of an IT system and legislation in April 2018 has led to... And I wanted to know what it had led to. But it's just, I mean, obviously, you won't know what it is tonight, but just, thank you.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Maybe that extra last line or whatever could be.
No, teacher.
That's great.
Thank you for that.
Eagle-eyed. Right, excellent. We'll leave that item there then. The next item on the agenda is the appointment of working party. Oh, sorry, do we have to vote to note it? I apologise. I propose that we note the contents of that report.
And I have to second it.
And we'll move to the vote.
Chairman, that's unanimous.
That's great. So the next item on our agenda is the appointment of working parties and subcommittees. I don't know if, Simon, you want to start just by introducing... this report, and then we'll open it up for discussion.
Thank you, Chair. Policy and Resources Committee and any committee of the Council is able to appoint subcommittees and working parties to assist it with work within its remit. In the past, Policy and Resources has appointed quite a number of subcommittees and working parties, and each set that's appointed lasts for 1 year. So at the first main meeting in June, we look at reappointing those bodies again. For the benefit of new members, the difference between a subcommittee and a working party is that a subcommittee can make a decision, and therefore its meetings must be in public, and the composition of a subcommittee must be politically proportional, so it must represent the same makeup as the council as a whole. Working parties, on the other hand, are advisory and should make recommendations back to the parent committee for consideration, and those meetings don't take place in public. The report that I've drafted is based on the arrangements we've had in the past for working parties and subcommittees, but it is up to Policy and Resources Committee as to what working parties and subcommittees it appoints. You can have exactly the same as before, or slightly different, or very different, so that's a choice for members this evening. But having determined what working parties and subcommittees you want, you need to approve some terms of reference for them so we know what they can do, and you need to appoint members and substitutes to them so we know who will sit on those bodies. That's my introduction. If there are any questions, I'm happy to take them, Chair.
Has anyone got any questions of Simon at the moment? I am wanting to just discuss kind of methodically through each one, which might give people an opportunity to raise anything that's specifically on one subcommittee or working party. At that point would probably be the best time to do that. But if people have got specific questions at the moment for Simon, by all means, do indicate. Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Simon, for that. Is this something that comes to PNR at the beginning of every new council, or have we got this report because we've had some problems or things aren't working correctly? I just wondered why we're having it. You might just say it's routine, it's matter of fact, or there might be something other, and I just wanted to be clear in my mind.
This report would come to PNR once a year at its first meeting after the annual meeting of council. So for this particular year, because it's the first meeting of the four-year cycle, there's new members involved, and in particular the committee might want to look at what arrangements it has in place and whether it wants to make any changes. But it is an annual report, and the working parties and subcommittees are appointed for a year. It's not bought because there are any particular problems, although I will just mention the introduction of written terms of reference, as some members will be aware, is something that was brought in last year to try and provide some greater clarity around the remits of different bodies.
Of course, we've got a number of people who were on some of these subcommittees and working parties, which obviously are no longer on the council, so in any case, we would have had to have reviewed these. Now, the report, as Simon has said, sets out the position at the moment of how things currently operate. Now, there are some things, in my experience of being on PNR, that I think maybe haven't worked as well as they could have done, and also the remit of certain working parties and subcommittees has evolved over time. Now, as I said, I propose that we go through them kind of one at a time and discuss each one in principle, and then once we've got that set in terms of exactly which subcommittees and working parties we've got, we can then move to in terms of deciding size and also which particular people from each group might sit on them. So I will start. If you go to page 37, it summarises on there all of the subcommittees and working parties. Now, I'm going to start rather illogically from the bottom working up. Now, the Corporate Peer Challenge Improvement Plan Working Party is there with the membership to be the same as Resources Working Party. Now, this has met, I believe, as far as I'm aware, once since I've been on this committee. It was set up, obviously, to discuss some of the things suggested by the peer challenge, which we had, some of which now may not be particularly relevant given some of the changes that's happened inside the council. And I have to say, I don't think this has been particularly effective in terms of driving change from what the peer review has suggested. I can't think of one item which we've discussed which has then been implemented. Having said that, it is obviously important that we listen to this peer review and take lessons from it and take action. Having it as a separate working party, I think, is rather than giving a kind of dedicated forum for that to happen, it hasn't met, and therefore I think we've slightly let ourselves down in terms of the response. Some things have been happening, particularly on an officer level, but I think in terms of our input, what I would like us to do, and it would be good to hear people's suggestions on this, is actually make sure that any feedback on this item and any discussion of it happens as part of the formal Policy and Resources Committee. It then has that platform. Everyone will be here to give their views on it, and we can then make from that any recommendations elsewhere that may be required in the council. So my view is that we no longer have this peer challenge improvement plan. I don't think we'll notice much difference because, as I say, it hasn't met in quite some time. Has anyone got any views on that at the moment? Councillor Andrews.
I agree completely with you. In fact, I've got down abolish this working party and incorporate it into the policy resources and take guidance from officers on issues that maybe needed to be discussed. That's all I've got to say.
Is everybody, Councillor Burr?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I think it's a prickly subject, and I think that it's really something that we probably would like to move forward on and not really look to what has happened. I think we just want to move completely forward with this, and I completely agree with you, Joy, that it wants completely scrapping.
I think the key thing is that what I don't want there to be an impression of is that, you know, we're forgetting about the things that were suggested. It's just, I think, in terms of actually incorporating them and acting on them, I think there's a better way of us doing it. So is there, by and large, Councillor Raper?
You could always make it a bullet point on each and every agenda that you put out as to whether there's an update on that particular topic, which takes up not a lot of space and not a lot of time.
I will, when I get on to Resources Working Party, just mention how perhaps we get better control of the agenda of the committee. So I'll mention that at that point, but yeah, that's perhaps a way forward. Is everyone happy then broadly with us going down that approach as things stand at the moment? The next one, again, is something which hasn't met for quite some time. It's the Constitution Working Party. Some people may have forgotten that this has even existed. However, we are at the point, I think, where we have a number of items which need to be looked at and discussed by the Constitution Working Party. I'm keen that we get that meeting sorted as soon as we can. And there is a date set for June, I believe, Simon. And I think it's going to be an important meeting where we actually look at what do we need to review in terms of the Constitution, open up that conversation. There is also an item from the Overview and Scrutiny Committee on the start times of meetings, which I think was completed 2 years ago and has not yet been discussed further because the Constitution Working Party has not met for one reason or another. So we've got that date sorted. I think we definitely need to keep that working party. The suggested membership, or what's happened so far in the recent past, is the chairman of council and group leaders. I think that gives us a good cross-section of opinion, and I think that should probably stay as it is. Is everyone, again, broadly in agreement with sticking with that? Okay. The next item, the one above that, is the... My iPad's died, so I'll just return to my paper version. The next item is the Subcommittee Appeals Panel. Now, it's worth pointing out on this item that basically this deals with quite sensitive scenarios. Obviously, in cases of dismissal, this will be where employees would appeal to. There is three named members on here, and this has got to be proportional because it's a subcommittee which has decision-making powers. And the suggestion is one Conservative, one Rydale First Independent, and one other. I presume the other is because you've got two groups of equal size, the Liberal group and the Independent group. It mentions on here about, in the absence of any of these members, the panel to consist of three to be appointed by the Chief Executive in consultation with the Chairman of PNR. Now, obviously, the training is happening, and people have suggested they'd like to be part of that. So we should have a pool of people who can be drawn on in order to fulfil this function. I have to say, I do have a bit of concern about us not appointing substitutes at the outset at this stage, in terms of named substitutes. And this may be just a question for Simon about why that's been proposed in that way, rather than us having specific named people to sit in case of an absence.
think in answer to that question, Chairman, it's just been around flexibility, that although this panel meets rarely, sometimes when it does need to meet the set timescales it needs to meet in, and if we had named substitutes and they then weren't available within the timescale we'd need them, it would restrict us from progressing with the business, whereas having a pool of substitutes just allows a little bit more flexibility.
Could I, just picking up on that point there, could I suggest that maybe substitutes, we have one named substitute for each of those three, and then if in case there was a scenario whereby we didn't have either the named person or the named substitute, that then we could draw on a pool as a kind of last resort. Councillor Andrews.
Yeah, sorry to cut you slightly short. I'm in total agreement with that. In fact, I've got them written down here.
All right.
it would be good to have three named reserves and still keep that for the sake of if two people are on holiday, etc. Because I think with something like this, hopefully, it wouldn't have to meet that often. But if it did, it gives it some sort of continuity. It's the same people, hopefully, most of the time doing this, unless there was a reason why they maybe know the person or they've had dealings with them or they're related to them or anything like that. But to have three named members, three named reserves, and then keep the in the absence of any of those in that as well. So I'm in total agreement again.
So effectively, the chief exec, in consultation with myself, that would be really like an emergency procedure in case those people who had been named weren't available. That seems to me sensible. Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. It's just, I'm just being pedantic, it's just that other, how can you have three named members and other being, obviously you've mentioned Liberals and Independents, how is that going to be drawn, worked out? Are we just going to see what happens?
Now,
we need to be a little bit clearer of exactly what.
I've obviously made the presumption there that other relates to, obviously, the joint third largest groups. Is that correct, Simon, that that's what other is encompassing?
In terms of proportionality, it would be the two joint third largest groups, as the chairman says, and only if those two groups didn't wish to nominate would we go to the fourth group, which is the Liberal Democrats, because of the proportionality rules.
Councillor.
Supplementary. So what if they both nominate and both? How is it going to be? How is the position going to be given?
I presume, Simon, that the obviously where this Policy and Resources Committee is setting the numbers and names of the subcommittees and working parties, and therefore, if there were to be two nominations come forward, would it be this committee that would then have to vote on the names?
Yes.
So that's the answer on that. And I know that's slightly more complicated than it would perhaps otherwise be. And obviously that would be for those groups to work out. And obviously for the committee to take a position and a vote on the membership. I think one thing is important, that in terms of the size, it's down as three named members. Now, if a member of staff who feels that they've been wrongly dismissed is coming before this panel, that, I would imagine, will be a very nerve-wracking and daunting thing to do. And therefore, I think to increase the numbers from three up to four or five or six, I wouldn't personally feel that that would be the right thing for us to do in those circumstances. Although this is a subcommittee which is making decisions, it is not making any decisions in terms of council policy. It's a very technical and sensitive subject area which requires really, it doesn't require any party political or group allegiance. It should be each person going there and looking at you know, the circumstances that are before them at that time and making a judgment together as a collective. So I think we do need to have three and stick with the three. Has anyone got any views in terms of the numbers for that or any other questions?
I think she'd only be three as well. I think five's too daunting for somebody who's coming, who's got raising an appeal. So I think it should be three. And I'm quite happy if we want to have quite a pool of people. As long as we've all done the training, and it needs to be... not everybody's going to be available, are they? So there needs to be somebody spare, just in case. And if it needs to be taken in turns, well, we'll take it in turns. It doesn't bother me at all. As long as the job is done properly, it doesn't bother me at all.
Has anyone... Councillor Thackeray.
Seems to be a slight contradiction going on here, because you say it doesn't need to be party political, and yet it is firmly party political.
Simon will probably come in on this one, but my understanding is that because it's a subcommittee of the council, under the Local Government Act, it's got to be proportional to the groups as far as is possible. Is there anything else just to add on to that, Simon?
Just as I sort of understand it, it sounds slightly contrary to say on the one hand it has to be politically proportional, but that is under the Local Government Act because it is a decision-making body, and then on the other hand to say that the matters before it aren't political because they're individual cases and they have to be looked at on their individual circumstances and not determined in any way in a party political manner. But despite that sort of slight contradiction, that is how the panel operates.
Are there any other comments or questions specifically on the appeals panel? Moving up then to the grants working party. I don't know if, Councillor Arnold, you want to just talk about the grants working party and how it's been working so far. Obviously the proposed membership is to have five on it, and personally I think that probably is worth us continuing in that same way, but as chairman of that, it'd be worth hearing your thoughts.
Yeah, we've had five members. There's been, in the past there was two Conservatives and the rest was made up with other people. John was there and Janet Frank was there and one or two other people. It was a good committee and it was non-political, completely non-political, and we made some good decisions to give grants away to local people. I would like to see it run the same way. I don't think we need any more members. I think that's just enough, five, because you get sensible decisions.
Has anyone else got any comments on the grants working party in particular and its size and what it does? That's great. Moving on up to Resources Working Party. Now, just to give a bit of background on this, and Simon also may be able to come in as necessary, the Resources Working Party, I don't know exactly when it started, but it was some time ago, and initially its terms of reference were to give, basically provide a forum, I believe, whereby members could be consulted on, I think, the capital programme and budget issues generally, and it's over time morphed into more of function three on the terms of reference, which is basically almost seeing draft reports that before they come to policy and resources. Now, that has thrown up, and I've obviously been on that for the past 2 years, that's thrown up a few issues, I see Councillor Byrne nodding there as well, where things have come forward to Resources Working Party, views have been expressed by members, and often that has almost been taken as a decision when actually working parties don't have decision-making powers. It's then caused a few confusions when the recommendations it's made have come to policy and resources, and sometimes we've voted to accept the recommendations and we've not actually had a proper discussion on some of the items. And it's become a little bit confusing. I speak for myself as well in that, of not quite knowing how it fits in, basically. And I'd just be interested to hear thoughts of other people who have attended that in the past. Obviously, Councillor Burt, and I think Councillor Andrews, you've also attended, but not necessarily in the capacity of... Yes, yeah. And if you've both got, I don't know if Councillor Andrew, if you want to just give some feedback as well.
Once again, I'm totally agreeing with your description of the Resources Working Party, because it was, I think it was every member of the Policy and Resources that were on it, bar one, which was moi. and yes, I could attend, but I wasn't on that long to sort of do that very often. And just as another comment, I think sometimes they were looking at stuff that didn't necessarily... Or am I getting that wrong with the council? I'm possibly getting that where they made a decision at Policy and Resources that didn't even come back to full council on occasion. But that's maybe I'm getting confused there. But, yeah, I think I once again agree with you, Councillor Duncan.
I mean, there have been occasions where something hasn't come through to committee because Resources Working Party has said that it will be minded not to support it. Now, that's, I don't think, how things should necessarily work. So it's really just about tightening up on making sure there's the accountability in terms of making decisions. Councillor Byrd, do you have any opinions as someone who's obviously gone along to that as well?
Well, I haven't been on Policy and Resources too long. And basically, it was just rather strange how it was run. And like you say, we didn't really know exactly what our remit was. It was very helpful as a talking group, and obviously a lot of things can be openly discussed and people can have frank views about that, and that was very helpful. However, I was nodding my head with you when things were done and dusted and that was it and we never saw the light of day, and I don't think that really should have happened. We'll have a new chairman now, so... if it's going to run the same, be the same, with slightly different terms of reference, I think that should be okay. But I do like that open and frank views, and a lot of questions, a lot of things are asked, and sometimes Policy and Resources, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have a heavy agenda, but sometimes it is good to have like the pre-meetings and a meeting like that. I found them very useful, as I'm sure you did.
Now, in terms of finding a way forward, I think there's a temptation that we could stress now what we'd like Resources Working Party to be, and it could still end up actually just continuing in the same way that it has done. Now, at the last Policy and Resources Committee, I mentioned about us being in control of the agenda for the committee and requesting certain information as and when we think we require it. And I think that requires us having a proper discussion in terms of the work programme. We have got a work programme, as I've discovered, for this committee. And we need to be able to shape that to know what's coming forward and when. And similar to the last meeting where we had almost a kind of impromptu discussion about things we'd like to look at, which I think was actually quite useful, to be honest, I would like us to continue doing that, basically. And I think we need a kind of standing item on the main Policy and Resources agenda, looking at the work programme and what we'd like to be on this, you know, for discussion at this committee. I think that would give us actually, greater power and voice as members in terms of setting policies for the council. So that's my suggestion. Now, obviously, how does Resources Working Party fit into this? Now, my view at the moment is that I'm not sure that if we have that proper discussion as part of the meeting or directly afterwards, that we need to have formal Resources Working Party bringing people out on another date to Policy and Resources. And my view, therefore, is that we should probably look at, for now at least, not having Resources Working Party and seeing what we may need further down the line if we need a working party, set something new up with a new terms of reference which people can have a say on after more reflection. I'm conscious as well that we've got most people on Policy and Resources now are new, or a lot of people certainly, and people may not know exactly how this committee has worked in the past, so I think people need to get used to it, and I think if we can deal with that further down the line, that would be my preference. I think there will be a risk for Resources Working Party becoming exactly what it is now if we don't actually say, you know, do something quite radical with it, basically. Councillor Arnold.
As Lindsay said, I think it was a good talking shop, wasn't it? And it was good. It was good to get some discussions, and it was good to have our views. But I think it needs changing. It couldn't make decisions. It just made recommendations. So I feel, yes, it needs changing. Yes, maybe we should come back and decide what we want out of it before we move on with it in the future.
Are there any other... Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, I think that you're referring to the model that North York County Council take, and I think that model works quite well because I think, in fairness, it gives... Especially, I find that you can, if you're not part of the bigger group, you can actually influence some decisions that are going to come forwards. So every member does have an opportunity to put something on the agenda. So I do think that model's good that we use at county, and I would have no problems of using that model. Yes, I did say it was a talking shop, and it was, and very frank and open discussions were had. And I personally don't mind if those open and frank discussions are going to be had in Policy and Resources. I was just saying that, you know, it's the workload, and sometimes it cut the discussion because a lot of it had been said previously. But I suppose that depends on the members, that depends on what we're discussing. So I'm always open for change, and that's fine. But the only thing that I felt was with the Resources Working Party, and there were things that I didn't like, but what I did like was that was the very, very robust discussions that we had, and things that could be said probably in the four walls, whereas this, you know, you've got to remember that obviously it's recorded, etc., etc. But I have no problem with airing my views that's recorded or not. So it's entirely up to.
I think obviously there's a good point there that we do need that discussion to happen, and obviously we can still do have those kind of frank and honest discussions with each other as members. I'm just not sure we necessarily need a working party forum in which to do that. Councillor Raper.
Thank you, Chairman. Can't fundamentally disagree with a very great deal that you've said so far, but I'm conscious that we possibly might lose the debate facility itself. And if this wants to morph into something like briefings, member briefings, and member briefings / discussion forum, then I think that might be more useful to us as members. And you're still getting your ability to make your contribution as a member, and you're also getting the ability to get to know what the officer views are as well, prior to you actually coming into a forum like this and having to make a decision. So I'm all for more talk. Jaw is better than war.
I suppose in terms of working parties going forward, what I would envisage happening is if there's a particular topic which may be a very big piece of work or something controversial which all members need to have a say on, and officers want a forum in which to sound out members' views and we want an opportunity to put them forward, we could set up working parties which correspond to very particular policy areas, like a task and finish group in effect. And obviously Ovie and Scrutiny use those at the moment in order to do that. And that could be something which we emulate here, so that we know what the priorities are for that working party, we get a resolution and then bring it forward back to here. That could be a way of maintaining that debate, but rather than just having a standing working party which is there and perhaps not fitting in with what we'd like it to, it might actually give more focus by having specific working parties. That's how I would envisage it working out, but obviously we can discuss that as a committee further down the line and see maybe what all our thoughts are. But certainly, resources working party at the moment, that would be my view. Councillor Andrews.
Just that the last phrase you were saying about the overview and scrutiny, I attended quite a few of the working parties before I was on overview and scrutiny on the big issues, and those worked really well. I mean, Councillor Raper attended them, and they were good. It was as and when it was needed, and on the big topics, when like Lindsay... Councillor Burr mentioned when it is something that's quite meaty and you need maybe two or three working parties meetings getting together, but doing it on an ad hoc basis. Can I just ask a question, because I didn't come to the last meeting? You mentioned something about it worked well at the last meeting. Was it something you did after the meeting, or
it was basically we just had a discussion about, well, lots of different things basically. I think that maybe needs a bit more structure going forward, but the idea is that everyone could have a discussion about what we'd like to actually have on the agenda. So it'd almost be a formal thing where we can look at what's proposed to come to the next meeting or the next one after that, and saying we'd like this in time for that meeting. I think it will give officers, again, they know what's expected to come to them and when. They've got effectively a deadline to keep as well. At the moment, it all just seems a little bit, we'll take that to that committee because it fits in. And there are some things, for example, the item of urgent business tonight, which is effectively too late for us to make a proper, meaningful decision, that if we factored that into the agenda properly, we'd have a proper build-up, basically.
My concern was, you know, what it's like when we've had a long meeting or whatever and people, you know, then the microphone gets switched off and then it's sort of chit-chat or whatever. So if it was something that was added on to the end of a meeting but still a formal meeting but not recorded, and people could speak freely. But as I say, sometimes end of meetings, people just want to, depending on what's been discussed, just want to get out of here. So as long as there was something else other than just that in the form of a working party, but not to formally recognise it. Yeah, okay.
I think it's going to require us seeing how things go and then working out what might work best. And some of that could be trial and error. But what I'm keen to do is just get us out slightly of the way we have been working and start just doing things slightly differently as time goes on. Sounds like people are broadly okay with that. Oh, sorry, Councillor Thackeray. I spoke too soon, maybe.
But my personal feeling is that I'd like there to be a resources working party, because speaking for myself, I've come onto this council because I've got a lot of things I want to say, a lot of ideas I want to bring to the table, and I want lots of opportunity to explain what they are.
That's fair enough. However, resources working party, speaking for myself personally, I don't think there's anything which I have said at that meeting which has then been followed through in terms of something materialising onto the agenda. No, you're not. I'm quite pleased about that. I think the... exactly. I think that the key thing is, I understand members have got ideas, things they want to achieve. I know we spoke about some already, Simon, Councillor Thackeray. The key thing, though, however, is what this has actually been is actually quite reactive in terms of what's happened. So things have come forward, a report, members have given their views. That's then come to here. It hasn't actually been us setting the agenda for the committee. So we need to improve that, and we could keep hold of the resources working party, but I'm not sure it would actually achieve what you are saying you want it to do. One thing I would stress as well is, and hopefully maybe members who have been here before could recognise, is policy and resources, I'm hoping, is operating slightly differently to how it has in the past, and information is openly available for members to have. An example so far is obviously those livestock market reports being made available to members to have a look at. So I just think our general mood as a committee is slightly different and hopefully more open than it has been in the past. Yes.
Thank you. You said that the livestock market reports have been available for members. I couldn't think of a single reason why they wouldn't be made available to members who are going to be asked to make decisions about that.
At this time, I was keen for them to get out, obviously, as soon as possible, basically. So that's my views, and that does require people around the table having a bit of faith in the fact we're doing things slightly differently, and with a view that we're watching what's going on and seeing how things might work going forward. So that's what I think should happen, basically. Councillor Andrews.
Can I just say, as somebody that's been on the council a while, I think there is a very much a negative feel around that working party, and if we're going to move forward with a more positive approach, to have it done like this seems a lot better for the people that have been here. I think you will still be able to have your say in plenty of it, Councillor Thackeray.
Right. We've obviously gone through all of those now. We've got a clearer picture about where, we haven't. We haven't gone through them all. I'm getting ahead of myself. Senior Management Contracts Working Party / Appointment Subcommittee. Now, again, this obviously deals with a very specific area. And what we've got, as far as I understand it, is a working party and a subcommittee with the exact same, or more or less same, terms of reference in terms of their functions. I understand from the past that the working party has been quite useful because it's meant that that could be called with less notice than the appointment subcommittee. Obviously, we've had some quite unique circumstances. Recently, we've obviously now got some new senior officers in place, so it's met quite a lot over recent years. I'm hopeful that going forward that we would know when this subcommittee would need to meet and for what purpose, and things may be slightly more, I'll use the term organised, but I'm not sure that's the right one, in terms of going forward. And again, another point of confusion from what I understand is you've got two things with the same terms of reference, with the same membership, and that has caused, again, I think, confusion on the part of members, not just those that are on this, but particularly those who aren't, in terms of understanding how things have come forward. It does make recommendations to full council on some occasions, and it's been confusion as someone who's not been on the subcommittee but been on full council about how we've got to that point. I won't go into obviously all the back history that we've had with this one, other than to say I don't think we necessarily need to have a working party and a subcommittee doing the same thing. Now, again, I think this will require seeing how things are going to work and whether we need to make, you know, further changes, whether this should be a subcommittee of PNR or whether it should be its own entity. But I think for the moment, we should try and do as little change as we can. And I think keeping the subcommittee but getting rid of the working party might clarify things. I'd be keen to hear from Councillor Burr, who I think has been on this in recent times, about how you think it's worked or how it could work better.
To be pretty blunt with you, I don't think it's worked at all.
Okay, that obviously says quite a lot, maybe, for that, you know, how it's functioned. Has there been advantages to having a working party and a subcommittee, or do you think it would just be better to have one, almost one body doing that function to keep things simple?
I think it all depends on the chairman, and I think probably one committee would be okay, but I'm probably not the best person to ask about this.
That's my view. Has anyone got any other thoughts on it? Councillor Andrews.
I've not had anything to do with this, and I just wondered if there was any other councillors in the room that had that could. Can anyone else speak on that? Have you? Fab. If you could.
It works and it doesn't work sometimes, doesn't it? It's there to appoint people, but I think that can be separate, can't it? You can, if you want an appointments committee, you can have an appointments committee. So I think you just need one working party and you don't need both. But I think, again, it's a bit like resources working party. I think the terms of reference need to be changing so we get what we want out of it rather than another talking shop.
Can I just say, is it 3 days' notice for a subcommittee meeting then? For a committee to meet? Is it 3 days or is it longer?
It's five working days.
Okay.
I have to say, obviously, the notice period that's there is there for a reason, so that it's, you know, proper due process and things like that have been gone through. I can see Councillor Clark has just stuck his hand in the air. Obviously, he's been on this as well. Would you like to come up and just give your views on it? Need a microphone.
Thank you, John. I think you're right in turning it to one body, and I think you're right that it isn't going to need to admit to act as a subcommittee other than when you are in the process of appointing somebody, and you'll get a lot of notice for that, and a week's notice for it, etc., is good. I personally would hope it was left as just a working party, not a subcommittee. And then if there is some need in senior contract terms to get a group of people who are elected by PNR or elected from the full council to be able to move and meet quickly, meet within 2 days if it's a working party, to look at whatever the problem is, if there is a problem, and then give advice to yourself, give advice to the chief executive, etc. That can be done quickly. It doesn't have to have agendas published. It doesn't have to have minutes published. It doesn't have to anything, but it can move very quickly. If there is then a need to have a subcommittee, then you create one for that particular job. And that, in a way, is how we ended up with a subcommittee this time. It was always the Senior Contracts Working Party, and it became that when PNR was trying to, I don't know what it was trying to do, but it was trying to do something smart and clever, and quite bluntly, if it had let PNR make the decision on the recommendations from the working party, it would have been fine. But, you know, it technically maybe needed to be done.
So you're looking at it from the same angle, but going the different way of saying we should have the working party, but not necessarily have the subcommittee unless it's required that
yeah,
would be the case.
The working party can move quickly, can do anything a subcommittee can do, except make a decision, but then you're not going to be making a decision if there is something that needs to be done in terms of senior manager's contract or whatever, which it's a bit like having the name on the tin, as it were. You would need to go to policy and resources anyway to say, this needs looking at, this is right, this is wrong, this is whatever. Yeah. And therefore, PNR would be meeting with an agenda to discuss whatever it was going to discuss. But you could move very quickly in that 10 days while PNR was being set up to look at it.
Could I just ask Simon on that front how that might fit in terms of if we needed to have a subcommittee for any reason, how that might work in terms of if the working party meets at short notice, they decide that we need to act in terms of a subcommittee. How would that fit in terms of setting that?
Sorry, Chair, I've explained myself poorly there. I am saying a working party can deal with senior officers and or yourself or PNR. The working party does not act or become a subcommittee unless PNR decides that it wants a subcommittee to do something. Sorry if I didn't explain it clearly.
That seems to make sense. I don't know if Simon has anything he wants to just say on that at this stage in terms of how that might work or otherwise from a committee organisation point of view.
I think the debate has covered off the different pros and cons of different types of bodies, that the working parties, it is private discussions and they can be convened very quickly, but they can't make any decisions. Whereas the subcommittee, if you do need to make a decision and the subcommittee's there, you've got a forum to do it in.
Councillor Goodrick, you've sat on this as well. Have you got a view you'd like to put forward?
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I've sat on a few. And I think we need to be quite clear, because I think we're getting broadly misdirected. The appointments subcommittee, or the appointments working group, or however way you want to look at it, is only really deals with two positions within the council. That's a chief executive and the deputy chief executive. So the likelihood is, how often are we going to need this committee to meet? So I think we just need to not lose sight of the fact that this is two very specific functions that council have to deal with, those two particular positions. So I'm just slightly worried that we're getting wound up into, you know, this appointment subcommittee being something more than it actually isn't. So the working group is there to take stock of things, but then there may come a point where we have to look at other things and making those appointments, and council would rightly expect that working group to become that subcommittee.
I think then, from what we've heard from people who have been on it and the past experiences, that perhaps for tonight we say we appoint a senior management contracts working party, which can deal with the issues in the terms of reference laid out, and then if a subcommittee is required or policy and resources thinks that we need to have that, we could set that up for a particular purpose. And that may also mean that policy and resources as a whole is keeping an eye on what's happening. I think there's been a disconnect there as well in the past, from my understanding. So I will be happy with that in terms of a proposal. I think that's just clarified things. That's been useful. Now, in terms of the numbers, now, it's proposing here that there would be six. Now, that's obviously quite a lot of people around the table. Has anyone got views in terms of the size of this working party? If it's a working party, it doesn't have to be obviously politically proportional, but we'd obviously have to have some sort of basis on which people were maybe appointed to it, particularly if that could lead on to becoming potentially a similar membership of the same membership of the appointments subcommittee. Does anyone have any views on that?
I think probably it might be best just to have one member from each political party. I think that probably would be a balanced approach.
I've just seen as well Chief Executive waving. If there's something which she'd like to come up and just address and maybe take some questions, given that this obviously is in her remit.
Thank you, Chair. I thought it was worth mentioning at this point that as part of the subcommittee, retrospectively, an agreement was made that anybody who was involved in these, in either the working party or the subcommittee, would have training in employment-related matters. So whoever you nominate or take forward would need to give that commitment.
Have you got any other views in terms of the operation of this in your experience since you've been in post?
Yes, I do have views on it. I think when it comes to employment matters, it is very, very important that you have the right people who are trained on that. I don't think it requires political proportionality. I do think it requires political proportionality when you are talking about the appointments.
Now, Now, there seems to be quite a lot to this, and it's not obviously not that simple of how it's fitting in. Now, I'm conscious that we get this right from the start, and obviously, in terms of appointments, particularly senior officers, if we were required to do that, obviously we've got to make sure that is done properly. Now, as things stand at the moment, the way I'm leaning towards this is that maybe we appoint senior management contracts working party based on what is in the agenda papers before us, with a view to having a proper serious look at how this fits in. And this could be something which the Constitution Working Party again adds onto its agenda, and we could make a note that that's what the committee would like to happen, and obviously as chairman of the chairman of that could ensure that that's taken forward. I think we should have something there in place in the meantime, which leads me towards saying we should have a working party. Now, in terms of size, there's six people there. I'm not sure if six is too many or whether we should reduce that, but I'd be interested to know people's thoughts. Councillor Andrews.
I've not had any dealings with this or been on this, but judging by some of the comments, it hasn't necessarily worked well in the past, whether that's just the outcome or there's been arguments politically, I don't know. But I think as Stacey said, I mean, if this works, it's more about the people than the... I think you still have the political spread across, but it's about each political group choosing the right person for the role. Right? Yeah, OK.
I mean, in terms of this, would there be any problem, Simon, with us on this particular one, deferring this to look at in more detail, on this just this particular working party and subcommittee?
It could be deferred to the next meeting. I'm not aware there's any business imminently needing consideration by that working party.
Councillor Burr and then Councillor Arnold.
Just very briefly, Chairman, I think it's about who you appoint and the background and maybe a little bit of knowledge, etc. But also you've got to think about whoever you are interviewing, and I know that probably you'd say, well, it shouldn't be daunting, but I have been in a particular situation where I felt quite uncomfortable because of the numbers, and that was maybe a personal opinion, but, you know, it's daunting enough to go for a job, and then when there's, you know, more than six, because others somehow came and joined the party, I don't think that's really very fair. And I think, you know, for equality reasons, I don't think it's fair. And just talking about equality, I think we've got to look at gender as well when we're looking at all these things.
We need to decide a way forward with this particular one. We could do something as an interim measure with a view to reviewing and looking again. That, I think if we were to do that, that would require us appointing a working party, senior management contracts working party, which could, I don't know, meet and discuss how they see things fitting in, or we could come back to here. Councillor Arnold.
I think we should defer this for further looking at, I think, till the next meeting. I think we can talk round and round and round it. I agree with what Linda said about too many people. I think six is the maximum we should have, but I think to get somewhere we need to defer it and look at it.
Councillor Andrews.
I just think there's a lot for this council to deal with. There's new members, there's a lot of meetings and things, and I don't know, I think if we're looking at this, we should probably leave it as it is now, and if anything happened, we could possibly look at if it isn't working, but to actually deal with it all tonight in one, that's my opinion.
So, would anyone have a problem with us appointing a senior management contracts working party this evening with a view to that potentially changing if, following discussions, between either group leaders or the Constitution Working Party. Would anyone have a problem with us doing that? I think that could be potentially a way forward if we give that nod that it's going to be looked at in more detail as a committee. Right. We'll leave that one there then. And we obviously need now names for each of these. Have groups come with nominations for their allocated positions on these working parties and subcommittees?
Yes. Just for clarification on the subcommittee for the appeals panel, did we decide three named members plus three substitutes named and then
emergency procedure,
yeah,
in effect?
Yeah.
So to sum up, we will not have resources working party,
yeah,
for the time being. We will not have the corporate peer challenge improvement plan working party. Constitution Working Party will be chairman of council and group leaders. The appeals subcommittee will be three members with three named substitutes with an emergency procedure in case those two people are not available. And we will appoint a senior management contracts working party with a view to perhaps that changing if we think there's a better fit somewhere in the constitution after a more thorough discussion than we can have perhaps in this forum, basically. That's where things stand. So we'll move now to having names for each of these from groups. We'll start off with the appeals panel. So the Conservative nomination, is this the best way of doing this, Simon, each group saying the names? Yeah. So the Conservatives is Councillor Sue Graham. I'll ask Councillor Arnold as leader of Rydale first for his nomination. And then other. Now, obviously, this is open to the Liberals and the Independent group. Is there a nomination from those two groups? Councillor Andrews.
I would like to nominate John Clark.
Are there other nominations for that? I believe so, yeah.
Can I nominate Councillor Burr, please?
Yeah, it's obviously we've got two nominations for the other. And Simon, could you just advise then on the process for P&R deciding how that could be worked out?
P&R would need to vote between the two nominations in that case.
In terms of voting on our... would that just require as voting on the electronic voting pads? Is that the way forward? Or?
Yes, just using the two keys on the electronic voting pads as we did at annual council. We usually do it in alphabetical order. So for Councillor Burr, it would be the four button and marked with the plus sign. And for Councillor Clark, it would be the against button marked with the minus sign.
Right. Well, we'll move to the vote then on this, presuming that the Conservative nomination is accepted and Rydale First nomination is from their party. We'll move to a vote on the other, which is four for Councillor Burr and the plus for Councillor Burr and the minus or against for Councillor Clark.
Mr. Chairman, that's two votes on the for button and eight on the against.
So, do we now need to move to accept the other two, or can we do that as a collective with the others included?
You could do all the uncontested nominations en bloc at the end.
So, that's the... appeals, and we'll revisit that as a collective with the others. Oh, the reserve, sorry, yes. So the Conservative nomination for the substitute is for the Conservatives is Councillor Caroline Goodrick. I'll ask Councillor Arnold.
Councillor Raper.
Are there any nominations for the other, the substitute on the appeals panel? Councillor Andrews.
Gosh, can I nominate Councillor Potter?
We'll note that then as being a substitute. If there's no contest, we'll do them on block at the end. The Grants Working Party, the Conservative members, in terms of substitutes, is that the number of substitutes matching the number? Obviously, we've got two seats, the Conservatives. Would that be to put one substitute forward or two?
I think it's normally been one per group.
So the Conservative member people we'd like to put forward is Councillor Nathan Garbutt-Moore and Councillor Ray King, with substitute being Councillor Claire Dockra. I'll ask Councillor Arnold.
The Grants Working Party is myself and the substitute of Councillor Janet Frank.
Councillor Andrews for the Liberal. Councillor Burr.
Councillor Thackeray and substitute. I think so. Yeah, I think we'll have Councillor Rabbi. Thank you.
The Senior Management Contracts Working Party. If we're staying with six, that would mean there was two Conservatives, one Rydell First, one Liberal, one Independent, and one Liberal Democrat. I don't think there's anyone here from the Liberal Democrats. Have officers been notified of their nomination for this position?
I've not received any notification from them, no.
I mean, given that, would anyone be opposed to us appointing a five-member Senior Management Contracts Working Party, given that we haven't really got I think it would be wrong to nominate someone without any consultation with the Lib Dem group. It would be their choice. There's one place and one substitute, so it could be one way around or the other, given that it's a two-member group, but I think it would be wrong for us to do that. I have to say, in terms of having five people on there, that to me would seem more manageable than having six, given the comments that I've heard from other people that are on there. So we could decide to have five-member Senior Management Contracts Working Party, obviously with a view to the fact that this could change and fit in slightly differently anyway if we decide to do something different with this, as we've discussed. What are people's views? Councillor Raper.
Well, Chairman, do we have to make that particular decision right this instant, or can we ask and ask them for their opinion on who they would like to have?
My understanding, and Simon could correct me if I'm wrong, is obviously, with it being just a working party, it doesn't have to be politically proportional. So if it was a subcommittee and the Lib Dems didn't nominate, it would then, I presume, go to another group to put forward the next in line in terms of proportionality. But given this is a working party, it doesn't necessarily have to align to political group anyway. So we could, in effect, if we've got a five-man body, appoint five people. It doesn't matter what their group is my understanding. But Simon, if you want to come in.
If members wanted to leave the Liberal Democrat seat on the working party, that could just be a vacant seat assigned to that group for them to nominate to later, but it doesn't prevent the committee appointing the other five members tonight, so that if a meeting was needed for any reason, there's a working party there.
Well, if we go with that course of action, the Conservative names is myself and Councillor Caroline Goodrick and substitute Councillor Chris Delaney.
I'll have to give you mine later, if that's all right.
Would that therefore then come again to the next meeting? Right. Okay. Councillor Andrews.
John Clark, and I'm going to be awkward and say, can I give my substitute later, because I don't want to nominate anybody that's without them asking them first.
It sounds so far as if we're not really filling much of this in terms of members and substitutes. I mean, we were talking about leaving this to the next meeting anyway. I know we're going back on ourselves here, but if we haven't got nominations, I don't know, I'm just putting the idea out there. If we're having to wait to put names on anyway, the next meeting. I mean, we can continue and just fill them.
Well, I'll put myself forward for the substitute, if that makes sense, because then we're just looking at the Liberal Democrats,
okay,
then, aren't
right,
we?
Yeah. Independence, Councillor Burr.
Get back to you.
So, in summary, we've got the two Conservatives and the substitutes, and we've got a Liberal and a substitute. So we've got effectively three members. That could make things easy, I don't know. But we're going to look at that again anyway. We'll leave that one there now and bring that to the next meeting. We'll take then en bloc all those nominations that we've just discussed. I will propose those. Is that the best way of doing it? And then someone second. Yeah. And we'll move to the vote.
Chairman, that's unanimous.
Right, we got there in the end on that one. I know it took some time. As I say, these can be reviewed really as and when required. I think that's something just to bear in mind. And if things aren't working, we need to know that they aren't and then make decisions on from there. Also, we're an hour and a half in, so we'll try and keep moving through the agenda. The next item on the agenda is the Moulton to Pickering Cycle Route Funding Award. I think, yes, Howard, isn't it, is going to introduce this item for members and can take questions. All right. Yes. Just before I do ask Howard to introduce that, item 8, sorry, on our agenda is the fact moving into exempt. There is exempt information in item 9 on the agenda and also 10 and 11. So I will therefore move that we go into exempt session, if someone would like to second that. Sorry, in a change to the what I've just said. There's information in the report for the cycle route which is exempt. It's just one particular part of the report, not the report as a whole. So it may be that we keep the discussion of that as long as people aren't referring perhaps to that particular document in the public domain. But if we discuss first the item that isn't exempt, which is the livestock market update. Sorry for the false start there. And I'll ask Philip to come up and introduce that item for us. Apologies, just getting used to this.
Right, thanks very much, Chair. Okay, this is the livestock market report. Just very, very brief, the purpose of the report is to provide an update to members of the committee upon the work that's been undertaken looking at the future of the livestock market up until this point in time. What the report proposes is that further work is undertaken by officers. There is some reference to the suggested further work that needs to be done, but I'm very much looking for a steer from members of the committee in terms of any additional work you wish to see taken forward. The recommendation further says that we bring back a report to this committee at the first available opportunity. In terms of the content of the report, just very, very briefly, what the report does is set out the importance of the livestock market to Malton and Rydale and does talk about the potential long-term future. I understand that there have been reports to previous committees of this group and also to full council on this particular subject. What the report does is highlight that some consultancy work has been undertaken by a firm called Align Property Partners, and they were effectively commissioned to do two pieces of work. The first piece of work, a phase one document, was an options appraisal for the future of the livestock market, and the second piece of work, phase two work, was a business case, effectively a more detailed piece of work on the preferred option. In terms of the phase one document, just very, very briefly, this was the options appraisal that was commissioned just prior to Christmas, as I understand it, and completed in March this year. A number of options for the future of the facility were investigated, and four options were considered in detail. What the report concluded, and this obviously is very, very important, was that a relocation of the livestock market to the Eden Camp Business Park was the preferred option. And it was very clearly identified as the preferred option for a number of strategic, economic, and catalytic reasons. What the report identified was the cost of a number of development scenarios, and they vary based upon the configuration and fine detail of the proposal. But effectively, the proposed development varied between £4 and £6 million total capital costs, with a funding gap identified of between £2.7 and £4.6 million. And the report stated that the council would be the funding partner for that, that particular funding gap. In terms of financial returns to the council, if the council was indeed to be the funder of that gap, the funder of last resort, the report identified a modest financial return to the authority of somewhere between about 3 and 4% per annum, though the specific details are within the report. That was phase one, so identified a preferred option, gave the rationale for that, and phase two really just built on that with further details of the preferred option. So I think from my perspective, what the two reports have done is given quite a comprehensive picture of the facility and the preferred way forward. But as I say, I think further work is now needed by officers to bring something further back to this committee. I think further work is required on the funding cocktail. We need to look at the commitments from other funding partners. We need to investigate other potential funding opportunities. I think we do need to look at further at governance issues and what that might mean for this council going forward. And no doubt members may have other things that they wish officers to undertake as well, so any views on that would be gratefully received. When that additional work's been completed, we will bring a report back to this committee. As I say, that will be the earliest potential opportunity. Thank you, Chair. That's all I wish to say at this stage.
Thank you, and apologies for having to nip out there. Obviously tonight, we're not being asked to make a decision in terms of whether we commit to this or not. What we are being asked to do, and the reason why I asked for this to come back to the committee, was that we had an update. It's been quite some time, several months, since we asked for these reports to be commissioned. Obviously, all members of this committee and outside of it, have now seen those documents and have hopefully digesting them and taking a read. Our officers as well are taking stock of those and seeing where it may be pointing, perhaps with a view to making a recommendation to us further down the line. we are being asked to agree for additional work to be undertaken, and hopefully our discussion can stay focused on whether we should ask for that. There are lots of different opinions about whether we should do this or whether we shouldn't. Obviously, we've spent quite a significant amount of money so far on commissioning these reports. They don't seem to me to give a clear way one way or the other. And my view would be that if we were to say we no longer want to continue, our officers to continue working on this, we may not get the final answer which we were hoping for as a result of this exercise. And therefore, my view would be that we should let them continue that work to, in order to come to a resolution. If people have got questions for Philip, please indicate. I think Councillor Burr, you perhaps had a question or a comment.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I just wanted to know how much consultation or meetings or anything have you actually had with the market company? Because at the end of the day, they are going to be the people who are going to be driving this through, and they are the people that we need to work with. So I read the report, and I know you've had that there has been a few meetings, but I just wanted to make sure that they have really been heavily involved, and the chairman of the market company. So it's really just about the relationships that have been formed and where we are with that, please.
Could I just clarify, just Councillor Burr, so you're talking about the company that we're hoping to get the cash together yet? Obviously, you mentioned about them driving it forward. Obviously, the remit, or what was initially the view initially of this committee in full council, was that we would be the ones driving it forward. But I think, is your question on how are we cooperating or feeding in their views to what we are doing? Is that what you're hoping to touch on?
For clarity, Chairman, I mean, they are going to be investors, whether you like it or not. It's a given, if we do or if we don't do it. And I just want to know what relationships we've managed to have with them. That's what my question was, basically.
I'll hand over to you, Philip, to address this.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Unfortunately, I think you're aware, Councillor, I've only joined the Council very, very recently, so a lot of this work was undertaken before I started. What I can say is that Section 5 of the Phase 1 report, at page 22, there is detail of the consultation that has been undertaken. And I think there's reference there to the auctioneers, the farmers, the estate, and so on and so forth. In terms of the specific detail of those meetings, in terms of what was specifically said, unfortunately, I can't answer that. If you wish me to go away and get further detail on that, I'm very, very willing to do it, but unfortunately, I'm not able to answer that tonight.
Thank you, Chairman. A supplement.
Tony just had something I think you wanted to add, and then if you want to come back with a supplementary, that'll be fine.
Thanks, Chair. Just to reinforce what Philip has said, Align has met with them on a number of occasions in both Stage 1 and in Stage 2, more specifically in Stage 2, where there was fairly detailed conversations had about their involvement in the project. The number of times that they've met, I can't confirm that, and as Philip says, we can provide that information for you, but I can provide assurances to members that they have had dialogue at both Stage 1 and Stage 2.
Yeah, supplementary. Thank you very much for that, and I do know that you both knew, so, and it was not started by you, it was started by another officer, so thank you for that. I just would like to have a look at that information, and I'm sure that probably the rest of the committee aren't interested, but I would like to see that. I'd like to see the communication of what's actually happened, or the minutes of the meeting, or anything like that. That would be really helpful. Thank you.
Councillor Andrews.
Just with what Councillor Burr's flagged up. Is this something that the council is, because it was obviously given out to the farmers and the market company, I think, at one point, who were interested in developing this, and obviously their input is important, but are they the only ones that could run this market, or is it sort of going to be open to the, if we build this and go forward with it, if the, I know we're just dealing with sort of releasing more money to look at it. But or will it be an open market thing where anybody could then run it? Or is it solely we're doing this for this market company?
Obviously, if we're building a livestock market, we're going to need someone who's going to be operating it and running it. It's never been mentioned so far that Rydal District Council would be directly operating this. It would be simply as obviously constructing it. That's my understanding anyway. But obviously, we do need to have a view to who may be running this facility if we go forward. And I imagine that as part of the next step's work that officers are going to be doing, it will be actually getting some answers on how this may work operationally and maybe seeing what commitment there may be from that. I'll hand over to Philip.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. To be fair, there's a little additional to add beyond what the Chair said. There will be a further piece of work undertaken by officers looking at governance arrangements, roles, responsibilities, so on and so forth. Just very, very briefly, what I would say, and again, I'm coming to the party late on this, so bear with me and I do apologise. There were three potential funding partners identified as part of the scheme. And so what's considered in the phase two report is governance basically involving those three parties, which are the council, the farmers and the auctioneers. But yes, to reiterate what the Chair said, we do need to do some more detailed work on that.
Councillor Delaney and then Councillor Thackeray.
Thank you, Chair. Philip, obviously I'm coming to this, like yourself, very new. All this is extremely new, so I've read the report in great detail. Am I correct in assuming that what we're asking for is another £150,000 to take it forward to the next sort of proposal, really? My initial thoughts on it is, given that the funding gap that's in there and obviously the low returns in investment, to me, I would find it difficult personally, seeing what I've seen and read what I've read in these reports, to say that we could commit another £150,000. Are the numbers going to improve? Are we going to look for... is there going to be anything else that comes forward that's going to make a difference from what we've already seen? Because my concern going forward is that we could potentially be left with a white elephant that we have to manage over the long term. And I don't think, personally, unless there's any new evidence that's going to come to light with this £150,000, that's going to make any difference to my opinion.
Okay, just to answer that funding issue and the chronology as I understand it, I understand that back in July 2018, this committee granted £150,000 worth of money to undertake various feasibility works. But I understand that subsequent to that, a decision was made by this committee and then full council at the end of the year that only £50,000 was needed. Okay, good. Right. I'm glad I've got the right understanding on that front. In terms of any additional funding requests this evening, I am not seeking any money from this committee. I hope that most of this work can be done internally, but if that can't be done, then I'll obviously go back through the senior management team and through the chair of the committee to ask for additional funding, but I'm not seeking any additional explicit funding this evening.
Councillor Raper. Sorry. I forgot. Councillor Thackeray, then Councillor Raper. I apologise.
Yes, one piece of information that, to my reading of the documents and the reading of the report, seems to be missing, which seems to me to be a vital piece of information, and that is the accounts of the auctioneers. There's listed a turnover of £13 million on sales of animals through Moulton Livestock Market, but it does not...
Just 2 seconds. Are you referring to any information which is in the exempt reports which have been circulated?
Keen,
I don't know. I'm just asking, is that something from the exempt reports? Just because we're not in exempt session and therefore this is still an exempt public meeting.
It doesn't matter. What I'm asking is nothing. It doesn't matter.
If it's not, that's fine.
It's just not private information. Sure I'm not talking about anything.
Okay.
I'm just saying that there doesn't appear to be any accounts from the livestock auctioneers who are being... loosely tipped as the people that would run the market. I was going to say rent the market, but run the market, rent the market. So there's nothing that tells me what is the viability of the actual business that's been proposed. And for example, and I'll throw this into the mix right at the beginning, because my personal opinion, without going into lots of the reasons why, because there is an extensive list of reasons why, in my opinion, if this is a viable entity, if it is a profitable business, why are the Rydale taxpayers being asked to pay tuppence halfpenny towards it?
I think in the first point you were raising there about the finances regarding the company, obviously that, I presume, is why we're being asked tonight by officers to continue this due diligence work going forward. So that is in effect.
Can I come back to you on that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I don't want to use the expression really, but $6 million question. If it is a viable entity, then the people that are going to be making the profit should be the people investing their own money in the project. If it isn't a viable entity, then this council must walk away immediately. So, from where I sit, if it's a great business idea, hand it over to the people who are going to run it and benefit from it. And if it isn't a good business idea, we walk away and let's do something more useful. That's all I had to say, really, tonight.
Thank you for that. I think, obviously, as I think most members know, and you and from the previous council, the whole idea of us looking into this, I wasn't spearheading this, it was my predecessor, but the whole idea from members was that we would get an answer to this, one way or the other, to finally put this issue to rest and Rydale to state clearly what its, you know, Rydale District Council to state clearly what its view was. It's been rolling on for quite some time, and although I take on board what you are saying, in effect is, regardless of what this due diligence work shows, you're saying whichever way around, Rydale should not be taking a role in doing this. So I take on board that point. However, I think given that we've committed the funding that we have, the £50,000, to this feasibility work, it's come back with lots of things that have been unanswered, and therefore I think it will be wrong of us and slightly premature if we say we're not going to continue that work which we've done so far. It may not answer what we were hoping it would answer, and if that work's been done internally, that to me would be the best way forward. By all means, do come back.
Yes, I attended the PNR meeting last July in 2018, and I took exception to the officer's report at the time. I wrote a letter to the Gazette and Herald explaining where I felt there were serious errors made in the officer's report about the improvement to animal welfare that this would cause, the reduction in food miles that this would cause, the reduction in the number of miles that the animals would be transported would cause. And today, from the market on Tuesday, if anybody cares to download this, I think people would be very surprised to find out how far and how many trips an animal makes by virtue of being reared in Rydale, on a farm in Rydale, transported to Moulton Livestock Market, then transported to West Yorkshire, there slaughtered, then transported back to Bridlington to a butcher. The amount of food miles that are generated by the presence of a livestock market in Moulton by comparison to what is happening increasingly by... Sorry?
By New Zealand land, then.
The fact of the matter is that the claims made by this council about the benefits to animal welfare, reduction in food miles, etc., are incorrect.
That's fine. Thanks for putting your views forward on that. I think...
The facts, they're not views.
Yeah, the way forward that's been identified is what we need to stay focused on, and whether we think that's the right thing to do. Councillor Raper.
Thank you, Chairman. I agree that the figures are not hugely great, at 2% and 3% and 4%, but it's still better than the bank base rate with the investments that we've got in with our reserves at the moment. We'd earn more with the cattle market per pound than we would in the bank at the present time per pound. The other thing is that the benefit to the community in this area would be huge in taking away an awful lot of... Be quiet, please. Thank you.
If we just allow Councillor Raper to continue.
Thank you. The benefit to the community in taking out traffic from the middle of the town would be beneficial hugely to the well-being of majority of the people that reside and commute and work there. The benefits to the farming community would be huge, contrary to the information just being given. That is an opinion, not a fact. And the facts are easily distorted by being presented in such a fashion. I take exception to it. I was a butcher for 35 years. I've bought and taken animals from markets. If the market here closes, animals will travel further to go to other markets further apart than what we're currently travelling. That food mileage will increase substantially, contrary to the information we've just been given, or the biased information we've just been given. The town would not benefit from having a cattle market. Having one on the outskirts of town is better than none at all, but we haven't got the full picture financially as yet. So until we get that information back as to where and how, the only thing I agree with the previous speaker on is that the cattle market operator themselves need to be a bit more forthcoming in how they want to go and proceed along with us in providing this facility.
We seem to have moved into kind of debating now rather than questions. So what I'm proposing to do is, is it comments, Councillor Burr, you would like to make? What I'll do is I'm going to move that we accept the recommendations one and two, in this report. I don't know if I've got a seconder for that. And now we'll move into actual debate and discussion about that way forward, basically. So, Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. I don't think it's helpful that councillors shout at each other. And I, the same as you, I think it's... I thought we were in questions, but obviously we entered into debate. So I was quite polite and didn't go straight into debate.
We're now in debate, so
exactly.
By all means, continue.
So I think that we've got to remember that this has now been rumbling on for 3 years. And I think we need to remember that 3 years ago, the market company came and asked us for £800,000 worth of help. They didn't ask us to build the market. They just asked us to facilitate. And as you've quite rightly said, Chairman, it was your predecessor's will or driving force that has led us down the path. And Councillor Thackeray was there a year ago, and I will say this again. What I said a year ago is, why is Ryedale District Council becoming a builder and probably investing and running markets, etc., etc.? I do think we should go forward with the report because we've made that commitment. And I do think, whatever you think, if you live in Moulton or if you don't live in Moulton, I think it's a no-brainer that Moulton Market moves out of the area. And I do think that everything should be honoured when Moulton took its fair share of all those new houses, wonderful for the people who are living there, but those new houses were given on the back that the Moulton Market Company would be given a piece of land, and that piece of land is there to be developed and for the market company. And along the way, things have happened, things have changed, and it's been of no help to anybody. I don't think we should be builders, and I think we need to carry on with this report and have a rethink, and it's a brand new council, and I think we should think about how similar to York in 1972, how they had a duty of responsibility and they had a market within the walls or slightly within the walls or just without, and they facilitated a move. And I think that's probably what we need to be looking at. I think you need the catalyst of the market there first, and then I think other companies will come and they will invest and they will build, etc., etc. So I think, as we've already started debating tonight, there are an awful lot of new schools of thought. And as we've rightly pointed out, there was a driver for this project, and that driver is now not with us. And I think we need some more investigation. I think we need some more facts and figures. And maybe we can just have a rethink about what we were doing. What are we doing? Because the benefits for the centre of Malton, and we all use Malton, yeah, I think would be huge.
Thank you. It's in terms of discussion on this, I think we seem broadly in agreement that we should go down this line. Did you have some comments you wanted to make, Councillor Delaney?
Thank you, Chair. Can I ask a question to Philip? Thank you for that clarification earlier on the £150,000. So my understanding is the £150,000 was allocated back in
July. We've moved off questions.
Can we not ask anymore?
So we're kind of into debate, but if you maybe wanted to make what you're trying to ask.
Yeah, all I was going to say is that we've obviously allocated the 150. To me, I'm obviously new to this, but it doesn't seem apparent that we have to actually spend that if we're not in agreement with that. And for me, it seems that I agree with Councillor Thackeray that if there was a viable proposition, private enterprise would have been in there and would have actually taken this up. To me, the fact that nobody's come forward indicates that it's not a viable proposition. But I just think it's possibly we're going to spend £100,000 or potentially a sum of it when, for me, we already have the numbers. Are we actually spending more money when we already have the answers that we want? Would be my opinion.
I mean, the initial costings was estimated to be 150. When further work was taken place, it was then deemed that 50 would cover the costs. So we've only spent 50,000, and there's no proposal tonight to spend any more money than that, is my understanding. Philip.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I did originally in questioning say I hoped most of this work could be done in-house. As the conversation has gone, it's become clear that perhaps there's some more specialist work that perhaps can't be done in-house. So, Chair, if I'm able to kind of reserve my position that I may need to commission some external expert advice, which is part of the conversation, and saying what did members wish to see going forward. So I'll be very, very open and honest about that.
In terms of the funding for that, where would that come from if extra work was to be commissioned?
I'd have to go back and check with Finance, Chair, in terms of what happened to that original £150,000. I'm not able to answer that at the moment, unfortunately.
I think one thing which personally I'm quite frustrated about is obviously we've spent the £50,000 on this work so far, and particularly the Stage 2 report, the fact it hasn't really given a clear way forward and the fact we've still got lots of questions makes me wonder, why have we commissioned reports which have maybe created more questions than they've answered? And I think we maybe need to, and if members are happy with this, me having a discussion with our officers outside of this meeting about the effectiveness of the reports that have come back, and us maybe going back to those consultants to ask them to do more work as part of what we commissioned them to do, rather than us spending yet more money. I think the key thing, or what I was hoping for, was that we would have some sort of recommendation which we could, as a clear way forward one way or the other. We don't have that, having spent obviously the money that we have on these reports. They do leave lots of things unanswered. So that's my kind of feeling at the moment, and I would be very hesitant about us perhaps spending yet more money on a project which we may ultimately decide is not the right one. We're kind of in a catch-22 whereby we could keep spending money to find out the way forward, and we may never actually get there, or we may get there and decide we're not going to do this. So we have to draw a line at some point. I'll bring in Councillor Arnold and then Councillor Thackeray.
I think this needs moving forward. I think we need to pursue this further for more information and then make a decision. And if it's right, if it looks good, yeah, let's go with it. And if a councillor needs to be a builder, if a council needs to own property, council needs to make money And we don't, we're getting all our funding cut. And if we can make money by building, we can make money by owning property, well, I think we ought to do it.
Councillor Thackeray, I think Anton would like to just come up as well and discuss maybe the finance around this for clarification on maybe any further expenditure.
Can I speak just before we start?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay. Just to echo what Councillor Delaney said, in July of last year, I had the pleasure of sitting with the brand new chief executive on my right, and Mr. Roddy Bushell, the former manager of estate manager of Fitzwilliam Estate, on my left. And Mr. Bushell leant over to me during the course of the meeting and said what I thought were very, very telling and pertinent words, and they were, if this was a viable development, a developer would have developed it by now. And that's all I want to add tonight. Thank you.
Bring Anton in just to discuss on the finance side of things.
Yeah, it was just to clarify the finances. So the only budget we have is £50,000. There is nothing on top of that £50,000. The £150,000 was, as was said, it was the earlier budget. My understanding is we haven't spent that £50,000. These two reports didn't cost £50,000. So, and there's no intention at this stage to go above that £50,000, even with this work. This work may lead to other work or potential of other work, and Philip's right, that may need further conversations, but to do the due diligence at this stage, we're not expecting to go beyond that £50,000.
I think that clarifies things quite well for the committee. Is everyone happy then? Obviously, Philip's heard members' views. I'm sure he would be happy to hear further views if people have things outside the meeting which they've got questions about. So in terms of a way forward, I'd like to move to the vote now if people are happy that we're not going above that £50,000 threshold, and people can feed in their views outside of the meeting.
Chairman, that's unanimous.
Excellent. Right. Going back to what we were discussing before, obviously, is the Moulton to Pickering cycle route. The advice that I've got is that only a section of that report is exempt. So I think we need to vote to exempt that information from the public domain. But I think the discussion can happen as long as there isn't really in-depth referral to that. In a public session, basically. For the discussion, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. I mean, we've got the next one, which is not exempt, which is the Tour de Yorkshire thing at the end. Would it be easier to do that rather than people maybe leaving and coming back if they wanted to? That's just after the Moulton Livestock Market,
okay,
we've
so,
got...
Right.
So, that's just...
Thank you, Councillor Andrews, again. We'll leave the cycle route yet again, and we'll discuss the Tour de Yorkshire. Obviously, in future, we'll get the order right so it goes in a perhaps a logical way forward. So we'll discuss the Tour de Yorkshire. I don't know who's presenting on this. I think it's Philip again. There is obviously a recommendation there about making a decision regarding us expressing our interest in hosting the start or finish of the Tour de Yorkshire and to confirm a preferred location if we decide to go down that path. So I'll hand over to Philip.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I suppose we're combining two reports here. Tour de Yorkshire is a cycle route, so we're actually combining those two reports, which I guess is helpful. Just very, very quickly, in terms of this being a late item, I do apologise to committee for that, but I think there is a good reason. We were only actually approached by Welcome to Yorkshire at the end of last week, seeking our views on this, and they do require our views by the 14th of June. So I apologise it's a late item, but hopefully committee realise there is a good reason for that. So as the Chair said very, very briefly, what I'm seeking here is members' views on whether Rydell should submit an application, an expression of interest, to become a start or finish location for the Tour de Yorkshire. And as I've said, that expression of interest does need to be submitted to Welcome to Yorkshire by the 14th of June. What the paper does, very, very briefly, is highlight the background to the request and gives an overview of the Tour de Yorkshire and highlights some of the benefits that it can actually provide and the fact that it has been to Rydale on three previous occasions. In terms of the benefits of hosting the race, I think those benefits can be on a number of levels. Direct economic benefits, hugely important, of course. They do raise the profile of any areas that are starts or finishers. They do assist community and business development, and I think they could actually help encourage people to get involved in more active lifestyles. So they do actually provide benefits on a number of levels, but inevitably there is a cost that comes with those benefits. The cost of actually becoming a start or finish host location is between £100,000 and £125,000. It is £100,000 for the men's race only and £125,000 for the combined men's and women's race. So we have a hosting cost as a starter for 10. What we then have are staging costs. And what I mean by that are costs that are associated with actually running the event itself. So stewarding, safety, security, publicity, marketing, community engagement. Basically, the costs can go on as long as you wish them to go on. But I put an estimate there of between £50,000 and £60,000. And that actually is an informed estimate because of my previous role at Barnes. I did actually run Tour de Yorkshire on four occasions down there. Sort of some experience of running this race in another location. So total costs are between £150,000 and £185,000 for bidding to be a start or finish location. Members need to make a view on whether you think that's value for money, but if you were to think that was value for money, I'm recommending we do submit an expression of interest to become a host location, but we actually specify that that is not for 2020, that is for 2021 onwards. And the reason for that is it is a very resource-intensive, in addition to financially intensive, job to do. And I need to actually get my teams embedded and build those partner relationships going forward. One practical thing I would say, and I think that Simon, if he's still here, would say I was remiss in not mentioning this. The Tour de Yorkshire is held first May bank holiday weekend, and that does tend to clash with elections, so there are resource demands there as well. Finally, in terms of if we were to host and bid to become a start or finish location, we would need to identify a preferred town. That perhaps doesn't necessarily need to be done at this moment in time. I think really at this stage it is, do you wish us to submit an expression of interest or not? That's it, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Philip. Well, going to questions, I just had one myself first, which was obviously you've mentioned about us expressing our interest for 2021. Welcome to Yorkshire asking at the moment in their invitation to us was that potentially could have been for 2020, but we're saying we don't have the resources at the moment, therefore 2021 is what has been suggested.
Yeah, what Welcome to Yorkshire asking for, Chair, is expressions of interest from 2020 onwards, so from 2020 onwards. So on that basis, not simply for next year. What I would say is that this is a very sought after event. There are lots of towns bidding for it, so if we did wish to have a reasonable chance of getting in 2021 or 2022, I think it's very much worth us getting ourselves on Welcome to Yorkshire radar now.
The reason why I asked that was obviously we haven't had that much notice in terms of making a decision and assessing the pros and cons of doing this, that obviously if we were minded to do it and we were going for 2021 anyway, perhaps rather than complying with this Friday 14th of June deadline, we could maybe use time over the next council year to have a proper discussion to see whether it was something we wanted to do, rather than us maybe making a rash decision one way or the other tonight. Is that a consensus view? Okay. Well, has anyone got any questions, first of all, for Philip? You do? Okay, Councillor Thackeray, yeah.
Philip, would I be right in saying or writing asking if Welcome to Yorkshire are looking for a start and finish as a result of many councils, as I understand it, questioning their relationship and reviewing their relationship with Welcome to Yorkshire as a result of the negative press surrounding the expenses of Sir Gary Verity?
Councillor, I genuinely believe that is not the case. I mentioned I've been involved in this race four times in my previous role. and there is an annual cycle at this time of year that Welcome to Yorkshire write out to all authorities in the region saying, are you interested in a future race? So I think this is not an abnormal, I think it's a very normal part of a normal annual cycle.
Okay, so Scarborough not relinquishing the role, start or end or whatever?
I genuinely don't know the answer to that.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Raper, was there someone else? Someone else indicated before. All right, Councillor Raper.
Yeah, thank you. With your experience and your knowledge from previous involvement with this particular venture, the economic kickback to a local community, can you give us any experience that you've got on the benefit of such?
The last full race I was involved in at Barnsley would have been the 2018 race, and that was the first time that Barnsley had hosted the start of the Tour de Yorkshire. If my figures and my recollection is correct, I think we got 26,000 people viewing the spectating the race over the entire Barnsley Borough, not just at the very start, but over the entire Barnsley Borough. And the estimate is that each of those people spends an average £20.54 per annum. So you extrapolate that out, and I can't do the maths in my head at the moment, but it's somewhere in the order of £600,000 to £700,000 of direct economic impact for the 100 or 125k that we're investing to actually host the race. Obviously, it may or may not be different in Moulton or Ryde. It may be better, it may be worse, but they were the figures from Barnsley.
We'll move now into debate on this item. Now, we've got a recommendation. We may wish to put something different forward on that, and I don't know if that will be worthwhile, me putting something forward now for us to debate, or if we want to have a discussion first. I'm just thinking it might potentially save time. Councillor Burr.
Chairman, I was just going to say, I hear what you say, but just trying to be helpful, might be good for you to maybe listen, and then you might put forward some ideas.
Well, my only suggestion would be that I don't think we've got the information to make a decision this evening on whether we do this or not, and therefore we should bring it back when we've had more time to consider, and if we do that, perhaps we won't need to have a full and proper debate about the merits or otherwise of doing it, and that would save time at the moment. We're not going to, if we're saying we're not committing to this, then we don't maybe need to have that full debate now if we say we wanted to come back at a later policy and resources meeting, was my suggestion. But please go ahead, Councillor Burr.
Well, it's one of those things, we've got a deadline, so maybe you'll get the feel of the meeting and then we'll probably decide. But I feel uncomfortable about this, and I know for a lot of places that it does work, and I'm not someone who regularly goes out on a bike, but I did go to the three areas of where the tour came through, and I did ask the traders, and for quite a lot of them they said that unfortunately it actually didn't boost their trade. It actually stifled a little bit of trade in Moulton and in Norton. I didn't ask many traders in the other area. I think it's a fine spectacle. I think it's absolutely great, and them going up that big hill, I think that was amazing, and all those the aerial shots that we saw of Yorkshire on a whole was brilliant. I think I'm uncomfortable because of, as what you've mentioned, of the expenses. I feel a little bit uncomfortable. I think it's too short notice for us to make a decision, and I personally don't think we've got the resources and the staffing and everything, and I wouldn't personally be supporting it, but obviously that's just my personal opinion.
Councillor Arnold and then Councillor Andrews.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with you there. We talked to the resident shopkeepers in Helmsley, and they said it didn't do any good at all because people visited, watched it and moved on. They didn't spend any money. I believe that we do not have the resources. I believe we've got far too many other important things to do. And I don't believe, actually, we've got a very sensible base to host it either.
Councillor Andrews.
Yes, I'm in agreement with both councillors on this. It's May Bank Holiday weekend. We're a tourist mecca anyway, with the North Yorkshire Motor Railway, the food market, things like that. It jams up the already congested roads. And, I mean, even if they were saying they were going to host it for free, I'd have issues with the fact that, I mean, it does, don't get me wrong, I think at the time it happens, I don't think the businesses benefit. I think they benefit long term when they've seen it on the, it's broadcast on the television. They see your, I mean, it, whatever happens, welcome, the Tour de Yorkshire has been fantastic for Yorkshire, for Rydale, without a doubt. But I think to spend that amount of money, when we're looking at something else later on that benefits only a small amount of people, but I think it's far, far better that we do that for people within our community than we do on a bigger scale. And so, and that's why I don't think we should defer this. I think it should be no.
That's fine. I've got a view, which is I'm not sure the £185,000 total cost is value for money, and therefore I would be saying that we probably would be minded not to go ahead with this, but I was just conscious that there may be other views which people have got, and therefore if we were to defer it, it would give an opportunity for more conversation involving a wider pool of members who maybe aren't even aware we're discussing this at the moment. If someone wants to make a recommendation and it's moved and seconded, we could then discuss that. Councillor Thackeray was first and then Councillor Burr.
Unsurprisingly, I've got ideas. One came into my head just then. I thought we could perhaps host our own for very little money for three-wheelers, for tricycles. Because then that will give lots of people who can't actually sit on a two-wheeler bike the opportunity to cycle. And I know somebody from Barnsley very well who can't ride a bike. So there. Thank you.
It's not Philip. Councillor Burr.
I was just going to move a recommendation that we don't support this.
So that's been moved and seconded. Does anyone want to speak further on this before we move to the vote? Councillor King.
Yeah, it's been through Norton twice, and it's been through Moulton once, and I just wonder whether we're being pushed into the situation, because we've been ignored in this last tour. I just wonder whether this has been done deliberately by Welcome to Yorkshire. Just a question.
I mean, Philip, do you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, just very brief. I just really can only reiterate the previous point. It is part of a normal annual cycle, and as far as I understand it, every authority in Yorkshire is given the opportunity to bid, so I don't think this is particular to Rydale in any way, shape or form.
So we've had that moved and seconded. Is everyone comfortable to go to the vote on that? So we are voting for not having the Tour de Yorkshire. So if you don't want the Tour de Yorkshire, you don't want us to express an issue, an interest in the Tour de Yorkshire, then you would vote for.
Is that a vote for a three-wheeler race?
Yeah. We'll have to discuss that at a later point. Is everyone comfortable?
Chairman, that's 9 votes for and 1 abstention.
Could we do the cycle so Howard could go over his tea?
I think that's the next item. Something with... was that... Did you vote, Councillor Raper? Oh, you abstained. Okay. Excellent. Right, so that's that one dealt with. The next item, I'm going to check that I'm getting this at the right point, is the Moulton to Pickering Cycle Route Funding Award. Okay. So the advice is that we can keep the recording on in terms of the discussion and how it can introduce and we can debate. There is, however, one document in this pack which is exempt. So if people aren't referring to the particular details within it and it's a general discussion on this, which hopefully won't be controversial, but I may be tempting fate there, then we could keep this basically as a public discussion, just with an eye on that document, the letter that's in there. I'll hand over to Howard to introduce this item finally.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, this project has been it's been knocking about, to pardon the expression, for a few years now. This feasibility study was undertaken back in 2014, and Council back in 2017 approved £75,000 towards project development and ineligible costs for the RDPE funding. Basically, the report in front of you today is to ask for your approval to accept a funding offer that's been made by the Rural Payments Agency, and to allow officers to progress the project. So going back to that £75,000 development funding that's been approved previously, we've so far spent approximately £46,000, but in addition to the £75,000, we got funding from North Yorkshire County Council of a contribution of £15,000, giving us a total budget of up to £90,000. So we've still got £44,000 of that initial budget remaining. That will be needed to cover costs, ineligible costs for the project. So I'll come back to that in a little bit. The project's been overseen by a steering group led by the District Council, with Rydale Cycle Forum, North Yorkshire County Council Highways Area Office, the Rights of Way team at County Council, and Sustrans. The route mainly follows quiet country roads and existing bridleways, and the route is highlighted at Appendix 1 of the report. The report sets out how the project has changed over time. There was an original intention that it would fully meet National Cycle Network standards, but that's proved not to be possible. There's a couple of tricky sections that we've just not been able to find a practical way forward for that. So it was decided to go ahead with all of the other sections and to look at improving those sections as and when funding becomes available and timescales allow, because the funding offer from the Rural Payments Agency is time limited, so we needed to get the funding bid in rather than just waiting for the ideal scheme that may never have come forward. The offer of funding that we've got now, it's of £628,000, just over. We got that on the 22nd of May, so we need to accept that or confirm to the Rural Payments Agency that we're not going to accept it by the 2nd of July. The funding offer will lapse at that point, so if we don't accept it, it runs out. I do apologise for some incorrect dates in the report at section 6.13, which quotes 2018 rather than 2019. So apologies, there's two incorrect dates in there. The years are incorrect, but the dates are correct. So it should be 2019 on those points. The funding that's been offered is 100% funding for development of the cycle route. So that includes design fees, project contract management fees, excavation, resurfacing of bridleways, some improvement to highway surfaces, for example, filling potholes, and making sure that the route is suitable for cyclists of all abilities, so they're not going to fall off at the first pothole that they come to. Just on that point, it could be argued by some that that would have been a North Yorkshire County Council maintenance liability, but we have confirmed with them that these roads are quite low down, as it were, on the usage numbers, and so they would never be a top priority for the County Council to actually invest money in. So if we want to have a good quality cycle route between Pickering and Moulton, or Moulton and Pickering, whichever way you look at it, we need to make those improvements. Some of the costs of the project are not eligible for the grant funding. For example, legal costs, landowner agreements, bridleway diversion costs, and so on. And those are mentioned in the report. So that remaining funding from the original budget will be used to cover those ineligible costs. And at this stage, we're not anticipating that the budget would go beyond that. There would inevitably be some implications and some risks involved in accepting the funding. The council would be responsible for any cost increases throughout the project.
We'd also be responsible for any failure to comply with grant conditions or any errors in grant claims, but that's pretty standard standard grant conditions. We'll also need to pick up the cash flow. We'll need to stand the cash flow between when we expend funding and when we get the grant back in, because it's always paid in arrears. We'll need a legal agreement with the County Council so we can undertake work on the public highway, a Section 278 agreement. We'll need to procure consultants and contracts to undertake the work. There's no long-term maintenance liability for the District Council because it would still be the County Council who would be responsible for maintaining either the public highway or the public right-of-way network. But it will require a significant investment of officer time to develop and manage this project through to completion, including all of the grant claims and so on. So the next steps, should members wish to make use of this funding, we will write to the Rural Payments Agency, subject to your authorisation to accept the grant offer, and enter into a funding agreement. We'll undertake procurement of consultants and contractors to implement the work, probably most likely using the County Council's framework consultants for speed to enable us to rapidly get on with the project, get it underway, and get it finished, because there are set deadlines within the grant funding offer. There's a little bit of further project development work around finalising the route just northeast of Kirby Misperton and initiating a bridleway diversion. Other bits and pieces involved include developing a marketing strategy and plan a programme of business engagement workshops. We anticipate doing that in partnership with a local enterprise partnership so that we get their expertise, their business advice expertise. We'll invite local tourism, local hospitality companies, attractions to come along and see how they can maximise the benefits for them of this new tourism infrastructure, how they can incorporate it into marketing strategies of their own and so on. Acceptance of the funding and implementation of the project will enhance cycling provision for residents and tourists, encourage greater uptake of physical activity with consequent improvements in public health. There's an estimated £75,000 annual benefit to the local economy as a result of implementation of this project, in terms of indirect benefits, additional spend in accommodation, in attractions and so on. And it will also contribute towards reduced congestion, reduced carbon emissions, have a positive impact on climate change. And just to pick up on a point that was made earlier, the scheme has been designed to be accessible for all users, whether that's walkers, cyclists, three-wheel cyclists, or horse riders, and it's been changed from an original proposal of a tarmac seal service to crushed stone to take into account concerns that equestrian users had raised with us. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Howard. Has anyone got any questions they would like to ask Councillor Delaney, then Councillor Raper, then Councillor Burt, and I will ask Councillor Potter, because he did ask me he wanted to speak on this item, and given that he's actually cycled from Pickering tonight, I think it would be wrong not to allow him to actually speak on this. So we'll go in that order, if that's okay, if you want to come to us.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Howard. That was a very good report. I'm wholly supportive of the idea. I think it's a fantastic idea. The only points I want to pick up on is Section 4, significant risks, and it's probably a question for Philip as well, is what could these increased costs be if we as the council are responsible for any increasing costs? Do we foresee any, and do we have any contingency if any become apparent? And then secondly, on 4.2, obviously states that this impact on resources. Will the resources be coming from Philip's new economic development team that's beginning to take shape, or and are they factored into the project?
Thank you. I'll just take the first one. I think I'll let Philip to take the second question there. Additional costs could be unforeseen costs in relation to a contractor getting on site, excavating some of the ground and finding unsuitable ground conditions. There could be additional drainage and things like that required. We are not allowed to include a contingency in the bid for RDPE funding. Contingencies are ineligible. We have included a provisional sum for unforeseen ground conditions and other such things. So it's an identified risk factor. They did try to withdraw that, thinking that that was a contingency. I argued the case that it was an identified risk factor. It's not a contingency. It's something that is likely to be encountered. So there is some provision, but I'm not going to describe it as a contingency because it's not eligible.
Okay, thanks, Howard. Just in terms of resource, I think Howard has lived, breathed, sweated blood and tears on this over a number of years. It would be very unfair to take it off him at this stage when the easy parts come in. So, serious answer, Howard will continue to run this project going forward. We literally yesterday sat down and talked about Howard's work programme for the next 12 months. This will be one of Howard's key three or four priorities, but my new economic development team will be taking other activity that Howard's currently doing, but Howard will continue to run this scheme.
Was Councillor Ripper next.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm very conscious, because I live in the area down Wrighton Rig Road, that it's not very wide along this road, and there's a lot of farm traffic and cars and some larger vehicles even traversing along that particular road, and they don't travel at a slow speed, some of them, especially farm driving. We need some passing places. There are a few that cars and tractors and other vehicles have made here and there, but we need dedicated locations at a frequent interval along some of these lanes, these back lanes that you're intending to use, for cyclists to be able to keep out of the way of oncoming or approaching from the behind traffic. I hope that this particular point has been factored in whilst you're point of designing the route itself and what other works need to be undertaken. A car travelling at 45 miles an hour along that particular road will come into contact with a cyclist because there isn't a room physically wide enough to give him a metre width passing room, because the road is physically not wide enough. It's an issue I'd like to see if we can have it addressed now, because
just a point you wanted to make, or
that's the point
answer.
I
want
to make.
Okay,
this road is narrow in places, yeah, and needs that particular aspect to be looked at carefully. And for any part of where we're putting road users in, the cyclists in contact or near contact with the vehicles, regardless of how big they are, how fast they're travelling, there needs to be a little bit of caretaking.
Okay.
And passing places or refuges,
right,
on both sides of the carriageway need to be thought about.
Right. Thank you, Councillor Ripper. Councillor Burr was next.
Thank you, Chairman. Maybe I should have declared an interest because I'm a county councillor. Sorry about that.
Maybe
it is in my ward, and I can't wait for this project to get going. And my question was, have you thought about the schools as well, getting the schools involved for the children to be aware of the cycles?
To be perfectly honest, no at this stage, but I think it's something that we would definitely want to do. I think up until this point, the main focus has been on getting the detailed designs and the funding bid together. But that's certainly a suggestion that we'll carry forward.
Councillor Potter, did you have a question, or was it just something generally you wanted to mention in debate, in effect?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I've actually got a number of questions. Actually came in the car tonight, I just like wearing lycra. I just like dressing up this way. No, I came on the bike, really. Right, yes, I have a number of questions. I'll do them one at a time, but just as a little preamble, can I just impress on everybody present, council and members, that not all motorists are the same, as well as not all cyclists are the same. You don't expect a 2-mile motorway built down to the supermarket. neither do you expect Formula One drivers to be racing around your back lanes. So there are a lot of different cyclists, and this is where we run into a problem with cycle paths, because there's a lot of people with different requirements, from people with little kids, grannies, you know, whatever, racing cyclists, people want to do 20, 25 miles an hour. And I am acutely aware, and have been for the last 40 years, that many cycleways are poorly designed, poorly constructed, poorly maintained, and that results in low usage. So the first question I have is that I'm aware that Sustrans have been involved in this project, and I should say, well done Howard and Rydell generally for really keeping on with this and bringing it to this stage. I'm really pleased, because we've got so little cycling provision in Rydell, and looking to the future, it's got to happen. It has got to happen in terms of air quality, congestion, climate change and so on. Now, get on to the questions. I'm aware that Sustrans have been involved, but have they fully approved the concept, the routing, the design and the construction standards, preferably in writing?
Very good question. They've been involved throughout. As I said in my introduction, we originally wanted this whole route to meet the National Cycle Network standards that Sustrans operate, and that Sustrans are effectively the gatekeeper for. So if you meet those standards, Sustrans are the people who confirm that you do meet those standards, and then you can be given a National Cycle Network route number and you get all the marketing benefits that come with that. I've got to say, no, it doesn't fully meet all of their requirements for the full route. It has been designed generally to meet their requirements wherever it can. The sections that they had a particular concern about were east of Kirby Misperton, as you come out of the 30 mile an hour zone on Kirby Misperton Road, just before it turns left towards Lendell's Farm, to Lendell's Farm. That section of road is de-restricted. It's a 60 mile an hour zone. It has a relatively narrow highway, but it also has particularly narrow verges at points. So there was no opportunity to get a continuous off-road cycle route within the verge. Equally, in discussions with the county council, highways officers, and their agreed protocol with North Yorkshire Police for new speed limits, there was no opportunity to get an additional speed limit or to extend the speed limit beyond the existing 30 mile an hour zone. So we were at a bit of an impasse between Sustrans requirements for a National Cycle Network route and the County Council and the police's agreed protocol for how you could reduce the speed of traffic on that route. So that's one section where Sustrans were not signed up to it being meeting their standards. So that is a stretch that I think we would need to be careful about how we market it, that we don't market it as a family-friendly stretch of the cycle route, because it doesn't meet Sustrans standards. In discussions with this went on for some time, discussions with the Rydell Cycle Forum felt that it was better to implement the improvements to the rest of the route to secure the funding that was on the table, or that was potentially on the table, to do all of the rest of the bits of the route. We can address any bits that don't fully meet the National Cycle Network standards as soon as we possibly can, as and when funding becomes available. There was another section just south of Kirby Misperton that Sustrans had a slight concern about it being de-restricted 60 mile an hour zone, and particularly if a particularly controversial development becomes active in the Kirby Misperton area that might increase traffic loads and HGV traffic loads on that route. That was something that they had a concern about. Everything else has been designed to meet their standards.
Right. Thanks a lot for that, Howard. Very comprehensive answer. I might add there that I am well aware of how good Sustrans are at
designing routes like this, and I have in my mind the way that a lot of previous cycle routes have been designed. And if anybody's seen the one going towards Scarborough along the A64, that where cyclists are expected to cross the A64 single carriageway at right angles, as John says, on five
can
times.
Can I just check, Councillor Potter, have you got another question? Or is
yes,
it just,
oh, yes, okay. I have. Right. It's on, yeah. It's just that my voice is so booming anyway. I'm aware that you've said that there'll be no ongoing provision for maintenance for Ryedale District Council, and yet these are exceedingly low priority routes for North Yorkshire County Council. So I'm a little concerned. So what provisions will be put in place for the future maintenance? And this includes surface degradation, winter use, because these will inevitably not get salted or gritted, clearing of debris, hedge clippings, etc., because this is the bane of a cyclist's life, where you've got hedges being cut and thorns are left all over the place. And this is the problem where cyclists will think, oh, I'm not using that. So are there some good provisions being put in place?
Another very good question, and one that I haven't got, I don't think, the answer that you would like to hear. We've had discussions with County Highways. County Highways will maintain the roads in accordance with their existing prioritisation. I would expect that if we do good repairs to the highway sections of the route, that should last for a good number of years. It needs really to be... I can't answer exactly how County Highways will maintain those in future. In terms of the off-road sections, the Public Rights of Way Officer has confirmed that they're unable to take on the additional liabilities of an enhanced route on a bridleway. They've got the liability and the responsibility to maintain it as a bridleway. They're unable to take on the responsibility to maintain it as a national cycle network route, if it was to that level. So I think there's an issue of continuing debate and discussion with our county colleagues. As the route gets better used, there's potential to exert more pressure to say these are higher priority routes than you might view them as at the moment, and to hold them to account in the future.
Okay. Yep. Could I? Have you got further questions, Councillor?
I've got two more questions.
Okay. I would like us to hopefully just move now into debating the actual recommendations, because time is getting on. All right. Okay. Could you just ask your questions in quick fire for Howard to answer, and then
yep.
We'll move to Councillor
right.
Andrew. Sorry to move you on.
No, that's all right. Actually, that brought me on very nicely to my next question, because how will the usage be monitored and evaluated, because this is likely to influence future funding, future provision of cycling facilities. And this is, I'm talking here about impact on congestion, emissions, air quality, and therefore the impact on climate change.
I'll go over to Howard for a quick answer on that.
Yeah, very quick answer on that. We've included for automatic counters on the route at three locations to be installed, and the County Rights of Way officers have said that they've got the software that they can read those counters without further expense once the counters are in place.
Excellent, thank you. Final question, at 4.3 on page 40, there's a reference to additional staff. Additional staff resources. Will that be a dedicated role? If not, what other roles will it be? How long will it be for? What sort of skill set? As in, is this going to be somebody with expertise in cycling facilities or just basic admin?
Is that one for Philip, maybe, too, or Howard?
Yeah, Councillor, just very, very briefly on this one. It probably goes back to my previous answer. Howard will be the project lead in terms of delivery and monitoring and those kind of things going forward. In terms of the reference to additional resource, there will be some additional resource brought into the economic development team, but they'll focus on other priorities. This is Howard's scheme, and Howard will continue to run with it.
All right, no, that's great. Well, I would like to move that we accept the recommendation at 2.1. I don't know if someone would like to second that. And we'll move into debate on that. If people have got extra things they'd like to say, if not, we can go straight to the vote. Councillor Raper.
Very, very quickly, welcome this report. Can't fault it in any way, really, as for its thrust and its direction of travel. There is a potential further point that you're referring to just south east of Kerry Bisperton. That's a bridge. It's very narrow, it's humpbacked, very poorly sighted on approach, regardless of direction that you come from. And two cars are passing each other at that location with millimetres to spare. A bigger vehicle and cycles along there are only just going to get through. Another point that I'd like...
thanks for that.
If I may, thank you very much.
Councillor Raper. Obviously, there are specific issues which I know people have mentioned. I'm sure they can be addressed or fed back to Howard. But on the recommendation that we've got, I have to say, I think it's good that the Council's managed to secure this funding. I think this is exactly the type of thing we need to be tapping into, using our resources to release funds from external agencies and bodies. And this is something we hopefully can try and emulate with other areas of priority. So that's why I'm recommending for this to go ahead. Are there any other comments people have got before we move to the vote? Right, we'll move to the vote.
Chairman, that's unanimous.
Thank you. And I believe the final item now we've got on our agenda is the affordable housing item. I would like to move that we go into exempt on this item. I think that needs seconding. Someone like to second that?
I'll do it then.
Okay, excellent, thank you. And I think we also need to vote formally on that as well.
We do.
Yes, we need to vote, sorry, on this, yeah.
Apologies, Chairman, that's unanimous.
Excellent. Right, I will ask Philip to introduce this item.
Right, thanks very much, Chair. My third, and thankfully for all.